This is the story of a short visit to Poland in the early 1970s. Did they really think that I would be making trouble? But the story actually begins much earlier. In the early 1970s, the Cold War was very much at its height. The Iron Curtain was solid as steel. Behind it lay the Russian satellite states of East Germany and Poland. Not the sorts of places anyone like myself from Scotland would choose to be. So how was it that I would find myself on my way there? Quite innocent of the fact that from the moment I applied to the Polish embassy for my visa to travel, I had been clocked by the Polish authorities as a potential troublemaker, capable even of espionage. It was my professor's idea, and as a most junior staff member at the university, I was in no position to quibble. Our research programme at Edinburgh University had just got properly underway, and we had gathered a uniquely valuable set of data concerning the way animals grow from birth through to maturity. The trouble was, as all this was a brand new area of research, we had little idea of how to analyse and interpret it. This is where my professor's good idea came in. He knew of an ageing and wise scientist who was presently the director of the Animal Physiology Research Institute in Jabłona. Jabłona, Warsaw, Poland, that was. So it was arranged that I should go there to work for a short while with the famous man. But what my professor did not know was what had occurred on our family farm in Cheshire some two decades earlier, when I was a child of 12. Back then, we boys thought Bert was quite interesting, but certainly not important. Only some quarter century later, after he was dead, did Bert become important, though I was not at first to realise it. To my elder brother and myself, Bert was simply intriguing, not least because he was very foreign. From Poland, our Grampy told us. He said we went to war for Poland, so Bert had come to us to help us win it. Bert was funny. Every Saturday he would come on his old Norton motorbike and lean it precariously against the sandstone wall of the farmyard. We boys would see it, often fallen over, so he would stand it up again, wondering how to start it up. It's all beaten up and bent, like Bert. Dad lent him his big double-barrel 12-bore shotgun. Dad would never let us have it, but it was okay for Bert. I don't know why, because he never shot anything. One time we stalked Bert, like stalking a deer. After we'd finished milking the cows, we followed him up the fields, hiding behind the hedgerows, like it says to do in the scouting book, with the man in a big khaki hat on the cover. Bert went up to the corner of the wood where the rhododendrons are. That's where the pigeons roost. He always says he's going to shoot pigeons, Dad hates pigeons, but Bert never shoots any. He just sat down on a log. There were lots of pigeons in the treetops right above his head. He didn't seem to see them. We reckon he was crying. He's strange. Dad gave Bert one of his old suit jackets. Must have thought he was cold, as he already had someone else's old jacket on. That made two jackets Bert had on at the same time. We stalked him again. He went to the same place. He was definitely crying. Dad says we've to leave Bert alone. Dad says he's all by himself and not happy. He says we owe Bert and people like him because he's a Polak. They fixed Hurricane fighter planes for us during the war and can't go home because the people there would put him in prison, which is silly. We'd heard about Poles. They were the ones that went to fight tanks with horses. Horses kick hard, but I didn't think they would put much of a dent in the side of a tank, so they must be pretty stupid. We boys finally plucked up courage to talk to Bert. Well, sort of. We sat with him on his log in the wood. We told him he should shoot the pigeons in the trees over his head. He didn't seem to care. We asked Bert about the war. He said that it was bad. Bert's face has lots of lines in it. Either he is brown or doesn't wash over much. He told us the only words you need to live are cup of tea, piece of cake. We thought Bert was most peculiar. One week Bert came on his old Norton, but not to go shooting. He was trying to say stuff to Dad in his funny voice. This was odd because Bert didn't do talking much. We hid behind the sandstone wall and could hear. Dad was mostly talking and Bert mostly grunting. Bert seemed very upset. That's not good because Bert was a nice man, really. Well, he never shot at us. Even though, when he was on his log, he said that he would rather shoot Germans. Better still, Russians, than shoot pigeons. Bert was telling Dad about his daughter. We didn't know he had a daughter. But it seemed she had escaped. She must have been in prison. At dinner, Mum told Dad he was to mind his own business. Dad said it was his business. He had known the Poles when he was in the Home Guard. We owed them. Bert had told Dad that his daughter was a dentist and now was a motorcycle dirt track rider. A dirt track rider. That's fantastic. She was in the Polish national team. They were in Paris at a big event. The teams from Russia and Poland and places like that did not get to go to other countries much. And when they did, they were guarded and watched day and night. So they had to go back home, even if they didn't want to. Bert's daughter, she was called Elizabeth, wanted to be with Bert. So after winning a couple of races, she had dodged her guards and scarpered out of the arena on her bike. There's no way they could catch her through Paris on her motorbike. Bert came back again the next day. He said that Elizabeth had run off to the British embassy. The French are very cross and say she has to be handed over back to her Polish guards. The Polish people are pretty cross too. They say she belongs to them and we are stealing her, which is against the law. Elizabeth says she wants to come to England to be with Bert. Bert says the embassy will not make any trouble with the communists, so she will be going back. And this time it will be prison. Bert's eyes were very sad and there were tears. And that was in the farmyard. Our Grampy said that his newspaper, the one he reads with his cigarette every morning, would not put up with that sort of stuff from the commies, and that the mail would sort it out. They did, too. We made the headlines in a big newspaper in big writing. Grampy says the Mail says that our government is pathetic if it does not stand up to the communists and help Elizabeth. They say that Bert is a war hero. Dad was really proud that he thought of telling the Mail about everything. The paper printed the story about how we helped, and our name, and the name of the farm, and everything is on the page. Dad is especially pleased about this, because our family name is spelt in a funny way. But the paper spelt it right. So everybody would know that it was us doing our bit. Mum said the commies in Poland would be furious. A couple of weeks later, Elizabeth came round to the farm on Bert's motorbike. She was in leathers, jacket, trousers, boots, the lot. Just like a bloke. She was ferocious. I didn't much like the idea of her being our dentist. Two decades later, in the spring of 1974, my carriage, waiting at Ostend, was different to the others. It is hooked to the back of the train going east. It is dark green, marked Moskva, Warszawa, Berlin. The compartment has two facing rows of worn, shiny wood bench seats. There was only me in the whole length of the carriage. At the end, there is a big brass samovar, not yet lit. Doubtless, it would dispense tea later. It was not very clean. My carriage is manned by a large Russian woman. She glowered at me, giving every indication that she does not favour having the likes of me on her patch. If there's any tea to be had, my guess is that I will not be in line for any. This lady is not into reconciliation. Neither was I minded to try to persuade her otherwise. I was given company to keep as one or two others got on board somewhere in West Germany. As they were in my carriage, they could only have been destined for the besieged enclave of West Berlin. At the West-East German border, the carriage was decoupled and the engine changed. Forward speed reduced to stop, crawl, stop. It was a little disconcerting. The GDR border guards probably got on there, though they had not made themselves known immediately. But in due course they came, four of them, filling the compartment. The West German officials had made an effort to look casual. They sported long hair and made a show of taking scant interest in my documentation. But these East Germans were smart, armed with pistols at the hip. Their hair is cut so short that it is not evident that they have any at all under their caps. The East German border guards appeared to be extraordinarily interested in me. Perhaps it's like this for everybody who is travelling into their territory. But I got the feeling that they didn't like me much. Perhaps I should have had my hair cut and got rid of the sideburns. They tipped out my briefcase, the seat opposite becoming covered with travel documents, visas, my half-written research papers and tables, the water flask, the cake box and the Mars bars. They did a good job on my other case too. They turfed out the clothes and examined the case. Perhaps cardboard made to look like leather is inherently suspicious. While one of the guards was writing stuff down, another was reading through the copy of Watership Down, which I had brought with me. At the end of it all, they somewhat grumpily gave my passport, with due ceremony, the official stamp of entry. I told them that I was a university academic and an agricultural scientist. I said that I was an official visiting scientist invited by the Polish Academy of Sciences. I told them I was the personal guest of none other than Professor Jan Kilonowski, the director of the Agricultural Research Institute in Warsaw. I had been reassured back in UK that this would be a magic formula for making me non-contentious, but at the same time, vaguely important. They did not understand a word. Anyway, none of it made any difference to the enthusiasm with which they rifled my luggage. They kept coming back, filling in more forms and stamping things, especially my passport. Did they think I might leap off the train or something? Certainly it was going slowly enough. The next time the guards came back, they were accompanied by a tall, lean and even smarter member of their trade. He appears to be rather senior and commands considerable deference. Whereas the others had pistol holsters at their belts, he had none. With him was a squaddy, rifle slung over his shoulder. They rooted about in my things all over again, I think just to make me feel unwelcome. This time, Mr. Important scrutinised all the documents, read a few pages of Watership Down, and gave me a queer look. The case was prodded, and the passport stamped again. By this time, I'd become aware that as the train rumbles its slow way through the East German countryside, it stopped a lot, but never at any station, nor near any habitation. The tall officer came back. He dropped his squaddy and brought instead a small, somewhat dishevelled older guy with kindly face and spectacles. It was some puzzlement to me where all these officials were coming from. They were probably keeping company with the large Russian lady and her samovar. The spectacles addressed me in what might have been taken as the most correct possible usage of the German language. So he was answered in the most correct possible usage of the English language. Neither of us comprehended one iota of what the other had said. It does not seem to matter, because the passport was stamped again. As the train approached Berlin, the guards, and indeed the large lady, made themselves scarce. It's bizarre that the train goes from West Germany through East Germany and now re-enters the West German enclave of West Berlin. The platform at Zoological Gardens railway station was even stranger. It was full of railway officials, all of whom, had they not been speaking in German, appeared to have come from San Francisco. No cap is straight, all hair is unwashed and shoulder length. Regulation dress is scruff. There appears to be every encouragement for the few remaining passengers to get off, which they duly did. All and every one, bar one, that's me. This made me somewhat nervous. Was I doing the sensible thing here? I was sorely tempted to get off the train with the others there and then. Outside Zoological Gardens railway station would be the Berlin Wall, the epitome of the Iron Curtain, and I was destined to cross it into the lands of Russian domination, oppression, and the gulags. I had made a bad mistake. I did not want to be where I was. I was deeply unhappy and just wanted to be back home. Adventures of this sort I could well manage to live without.